Field Ship 142 slowly approaches, a sight to behold. A vast aqua blue rift that bled with spinning crystalline hexagons that either evaporated in the abyss or collided into one another, triggering flashbang levels of lumens that set off chain reactions too dangerous for the naked eye. Atrax's blackout visor begins to compensate and dramatically tints darker, successfully protecting his sensitive eyes. Before the rift's flickering could become harmful for the crew, who gawked in amazement at the stellar anomaly, Atrax warns them of the light levels. The tackler attempts to activate the shielding tint, but is denied access by the system until Tech Servan forwards him the additional data he commanded from the tech engineer. It included a few access codes made exclusive to high-level coach operatives. "These are some pretty fancy perks for just a technician," the tackler says, just before activating the tint. Tag and Capsis look onward, though. 131's distress signal had ceased its transmission hours ago. And so, the crew's eyes scan the dark intently for their distressed quarry. "Hey, I got something," the tackler shouts, as it pulls up data records it found on Field Ship 131. The crew is shown a structural analysis and schematic of Field Ship 131, along with its somewhat odd and renowned passengers. Atrax makes an assessment of the ship's construction and enlightens the crew on its make, model, and the metals likely used to build it. He declares that it's nigh impenetrable by ballistic weaponry and common explosives. Tack agrees. He's seen this type of ship out in the field before. Often they were used to store and transport their most valuable liquid resources. This one was merely repurposed into being a living space. Three-floored armored space yacht, a few more turrets than usual. It was one hell of a field ship, though. Capsis was very familiar with the crew, for they were almost, if not just as fabled as the Ink, a family of savants known for their wisdom and record-keeping. A mother and her three eldest sons, all of them exceptionally gifted. Fast-reading, photographic memory-having-ass geniuses who all registered as helmets to scour the stars for lost history. "They're weird," she says. "And I hear they're blood drinkers." Tack and Atrax look at her in disbelief. "Hey, it's a rumor, but just look at them." Tack observes the profile of this odd family, pale flesh, almond-eyed, with snow-white hair, all of them, each one looking more cloned than the next. Their mother could have spat them all out. "A helmet family, huh?" the tackler says, leaning back in the chair. "That's something you don't see every day," the tackler jokes, when suddenly, Tack's eyes widen, and he points out into the abyss. The ship detects a nearby object. Tack shouts, "There!" A far ways out, Field Ship 131 could be seen suspended in place, uncomfortably close to the big blue rift. Tack requests info on the rift, but there were no records of such thing, and science wasn't this crew's strong point. It was definitely a threat. "I'm picking up something else," the tackler shouts. We see a Field Ship 131 escape pod stranded a good ways from where it came. It looked in terrible shape, appearing to have suffered some mechanical damages, as well as the life containment unit appearing inoperable, judging by the flickering and dim lights. Whatever escaped, it probably didn't escape alive. The crew looks at each other, then at the tackler. We cut to the crew, awaiting in the bay corridor as the tackler, now tethered to Field Ship 142, has been cast out into the abyss, the cord disappearing into utter darkness slowly. The abysm of post-gamma irradiated space was nothing to toy with. 50% of helmet deaths were attributed to the abominations that swam and manifested from within. It wasn't uncommon for tacklers to never return to their ships, likely carried across the galaxy in the belly of a well-sized abomination. Tack's eyes were fixated on the slackless tether, expecting to see the tackler return at any moment. Suddenly, and fast approaching, we see the tackler hover back, pushing the damaged escape pod along with it. Tack nods to Capsis, then Atrax. Capsis gives the thumbs up, nerves calm. From outside, we also see the tackler give the thumbs up, signaling that everything appears copacetic. Tack and Atrax open the hatch and assist the tackler with hauling in the pod into the rec room, while Capsis stands guard with hand on hilt of her sword, ready to divide anything with a moment's notice. "There's a woman in there," the tackler says. Tack walks over and looks into the small windshield of the escape pod and sees a frigid, well-aged woman. He peers over her face closely. Surprisingly enough, there still appeared to be some life in her. Could she still be alive? He wonders. Maybe the crew got her in the nick of time. Suddenly, her eyes and mouth open, letting out a terrible scream, and begins gasping for air. Tack leaps up to his feet and calls for Atrax, who we see swiftly stepping forward with his tools, ready to excavate and break the survivor out of the pod. With all four of his arms, he begins to efficiently break down and dismantle the pod with powerful and effective tools. His top left arm hammers as his bottom right arm chips it off. His bottom left gathers the scrap for his remaining arm, which meticulously organizes it all into heaps, which will be smelted in a specific order later, but not until... When suddenly, several black aberrant tendrils burst out of the pod unit, cascading 12 feet out in all directions. Catrax is bashed by the pod hatch, wielded by a single tendril, with immense strength throwing him across the rec room into the tattered sofa. Bursting outward toward Tack is the unveiled, bloated corpse of the woman suspended 6 feet off of the floor, a violent, ravaging tendrils protruding from out of her belly. Hyper alert, Tack draws his pistol and fires it, blowing a quadrant of the abominable woman's head off, but it doesn't slow down the screeching creature, appearing highly ineffective. Suddenly, her left ribcage flails open as a mutated spinal cord unfurls, lined with sharp bone spurs and a scythe-shaped bone structure at the tip, whips toward Tack in an attempt to cleave him clear in half. Everything goes bright from the clash of bone and metal as we see Capsis Discori stationed by Tack's side, brandishing her blade, putting it between Tack and the grinding bone scythe, desperately trying to overpower the mercenary to eviscerate her ally. With teeth grinding, Capsis roundhouse kicks the spinal assault, severing it into two with the blade in her boot, and in one agile twirl, her maneuver turns into a lethal lunge of her blade that penetrates the creature's core through and through, then dissects it vertically, sending both sides of the disgusting monstrosity plopping to the floor. Its deep brown coagulated blood oozes all over the rec room floor, with the stench of death antagonizing to the senses. Capsis sheathes her sword and retracts her boot blade, or at least attempts to. Repeatedly stomping her defective combat boot blade, she clumsily begins to lose her footing on the abomination's blood, skipping and sliding across the floor, then quickly leaping back to her teeth, or at least she attempts to. Repeatedly stomping her defective combat boot, she clumsily slips on the abomination's blood and loses her footing fast, skipping and sliding across the floor, then quickly leaping back to her feet. Tack's heart was racing, adrenaline still pumping. These are the abominations he's heard of plaguing the stars across the irradiated galaxy. During her escape, damage to the pod must have rendered this woman exposed, succumbing to the gamma radiation and becoming this monster. They were much more grotesque and repulsive than he could ever imagine. Their smell was that of rotten, wet flesh corroded and baked within sweltering humidity. Tack unloads a few more rounds into the creature to be certain. He looks at Atrox, who we see sprawled out on the sofa, completely shell-shocked. And he looks at Capsis. Thanks her. She humbly nods back. They both look around the rec room for an absent tackler and find it keeled over, holding its stomach in the corner, as loud rumblings can be heard bellowing through its body. He raises his hand and says, I'm good. The crew congregates in the pit once more to contemplate their next plan of action. Field ship 131 suspended before them, tangled within the blue glassy rift's subtle gravitational pull, the crew's demise still unknown to them. Atrox reveals to the group a draft of the ship's schematics, solely theorized by Atrox's understanding of the ship's construction. With all arms engaged, each one etching, marking, and jotting down potential rooms and suspected amenities that may exist in said rooms, such as an armory, experimental containment cells, an advanced coach utility center, and every transport ship has exceptional hardware security. We gotta get that. And if we're really lucky, I'll be able to find another forge torch to replace my broken one. Suffice it to say, Atrox can only imagine what he could break down from those potential items. Salvaging the ship may have become a risk worth taking after all. There weren't any signs of hostile ships, so no firefights. And the ship was still intact. This is starting to look like a go, Capsis says, as she tightens her gear, her facial etchings beginning to glow, mirroring her wanderlust and thirst for action. The tackler begins to close in on the ship, and suddenly Tack says, wait. The disciplined ex-military helmet knew never to go into a situation until a thorough assessment has been made. He also knew the best information is sometimes best seen with our own eyes. Tack commands the tackler to circle around to the back end of Field Ship 131, the side facing the gaping rift. The tackler hesitates. This was incredibly dangerous as it would put the ship in a compromising predicament from a proximity standpoint. The tackler could man the ship, but this would take an expert pilot to maneuver them to where they needed to be in order to see the ship's rift side. Tack doesn't repeat himself, though. He looks at the tackler with a glare of confidence. The tackler peers back at Capsis. She didn't appear as confident in the tackler's piloting skills as he did, but it was the smart thing to do before jumping in headfirst. The tackler rubs his hands together and grabs both levers tight. The ship tilts and rolls off to the side of 131 while closing in just enough to get a view of an unseen corner of the ship. Minor turbulence ensues, but it was the stray crystalline prisms of the cold blue glass hurling toward the ship that would need to be avoided. The tackler is forced to cut inward, sending Field Ship 142 into a larger cluster of giant hexagonal rift shards, nearly grazing the ship and sapping the ship's fuel cores during the energetic exchange, but gets through nonetheless. The radiance of the nearby sun was filtered through the magnetic rift, painting the interior of the room and all the crew's faces a magnetic blue, slightly dimmed by the light-blocking shields. It was beautiful. But splendor aside, the crew was finally able to see for themselves the weight of the risks that they were facing, salvaging Field Ship 131. We slow pan across the entire side of the field ship and see that it has been encased in blue crystalline ice forms, likely as a result of its proximity to the rift's strange properties. But not only that, the ship's innards can be seen scattered about an ocean of debris surrounding a large hole that had been bored into the ship's hindside. The crew was quiet. The tackler turns to the crew and asks them all, how bad do we need that forge torch?